This is lecture number 5, New Testament Greek for Beginners. And now we are still in lesson number 4. We want to look at paragraph 39. This is the declension of the Greek word huios. Huios. I have not called your attention to the fact that this word has a rough breathing mark on it. And notice where that rough breathing mark is, on the iota. This, do you recall, hui, the upsilon and iota, do you recall that this is a diphthong? And this diphthong is made up of the two close vowels. Remember, alpha, epsilon, omicron are open vowels, but here is the only diphthong that is made up of the two close vowels. The vowels that are used to close a diphthong are now themselves together a diphthong. And it is the upsilon iota. If this occurred the other way, if the iota occurred first, iota upsilon, then it would not be a diphthong. And you will also take note that the rough breathing mark is over the second vowel of the diphthong, the iota. So it is pronounced hui. The rough breathing mark being the H sound, huios, huios. The pronunciation of this, huios, nominative, huiu, genitive, huio, dative, huion, accusative, huie, vocative, huioi, in the plural, is both the nominative and the vocative, genitive huion, dative huiois, accusative huius. Now, the general rules of accent did not help us with reference to what the accent is. The only thing the general rules of accent say, and the noun rules of accent, is that the accent tries to stay on the same syllable that it is on throughout. That's the noun rules of accent. But in paragraph 40, notice the rule of accent decrees that the accent must be on the ultima in all cases for the nouns, because it starts on the huios in the nominative singular. But what should the accent be? We just know that it's going to stay on the ultima because that's where it started. But does the accent remain the same accent as on the nominative singular? No, it does not. And so we have a very special rule for noun accents here. And that rule is given here in this next paragraph. Memorize it, underline it in red, and remember it. Write it on a card and memorize it. This is very important. In my own book here, I've got no, and it's underlined, underlined 6 times. And important is written out here in the margin with an arrow leading to the sentence. And here it is. In the second declension, the types of nouns that we're studying now, the second declension, when the ultima is accented at all, it has the circumflex in the genitive and dative of both the singular and the plural. Elsewhere, it has the acute accent. Well, that means that the acute accent appears only in the nominative singular, the accusative singular, the vocative singular, the nominative and vocative plural, and the accusative plural. So if you have the accent, the circumflex, on these syllables must be long syllables, and certainly they are. Genitive singular, huiu, omicron upsilon, is a long syllable, a diphthong. The dative, huio, this is what we call an improper diphthong because it has an omega with an iota subscript. The genitive plural, huion, that's a long ultima, omega. And the dative plural is a long syllable because it's the omicron iota plus the sigma, huiois. Notice also that the accusative plural is long, but it has the acute accent. This sort of makes it simple, or a little more simple at least, to memorize where the accents go and what types of accents they are. The genitive singular, the dative singular, the genitive plural, and the dative plural are all circumflex accents on these words where the noun has the accent on the ultima in the nominative singular. We're talking here about second declension nouns now. Remember that. Paragraph 41, the word doron. We've already talked about that, and we said that the nominative, vocative, and nominative, accusative, and vocative of both numbers, singular and plural, are all alike. And he also tells us in that sentence of paragraph 42 that in the nominative, vocative, and accusative plural always end in a short alpha. Notice that, dora. If the alpha in dora, both nominative, vocative, and accusative plural, if that alpha were a long alpha, then the accent on the omega would have to be an acute accent. But since it is a short alpha, then the omega has a circumflex. This reflects back on your rules of accent that we've studied before, and hopefully by now you have committed to memory very solidly. Now, Machen speaks about the order of words in the Greek New Testament. A good portion of the time, the sentences are written just about like we write English. First of all, the subject, then the verb, then the object. Modifying words, you know, the subject will have modifiers, adjectives. Verbs will have adverbs. There will be objects, and they can have their modifiers, and their adjectives, and there are adverbs, and there are prepositions. It's very much like in English. However, this is not always the rule. Very often, the Greek will change the word order, invert the word order, so as to put emphasis on certain things that the writer wants you to be sure to catch. And so you can't always count on those on the words being in the same order every time, just like you read them in your English translation. So, this makes it necessary for us, when we are translating, to do something I must introduce now, and that is location. Location. If you can't locate, you can't translate. You must locate. All right, that's a word with, of course, a lot of different meanings. The word usually means to find. And in a very real sense, that's exactly what I'm talking about now. You must find the word, what it means, where it goes, and that sort of thing. Now, in your syllabus, I have included a model for you for location. I want you to look at that form right now. I want you to understand this form, because from now on, when you are translating, you must use this idea for translating before you can actually speak authoritatively on what you have translated. And I repeat for you, and I've put this sentence on the form. If you can't locate, you cannot translate. So you must locate every time you want to translate you will be locating. Now, let's define what we mean by locating. Notice on the form in your syllabus. This is not in Machen's book. Now, you must go to your syllabus. The form has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 columns vertically on the page. You can make up your own. You can buy these things at some of the Bible bookstores. Certainly, I don't believe you can buy these at any Christian bookstore. I've made my own for years, and of course I have a lot that I bought when I was translating the New Testament. And by the way, I have gone through the entire New Testament locating every word. So look at the first column. I've numbered these columns for you, 1, 2, 3, and so forth. And each column has a name and a description of what you're looking for. In the first column is the form. You put the form on the line. You put on that line the form that you have in the sentence. And I'd like to take the first sentence in the exercises, paragraph 45. So under the form in the sentence, you will put the word Adelphos. Adelphos. Then the second column has source, and this means the form in the lexicon. Well, the form in the lexicon is exactly like the form in this sentence, Adelphos. The third column is either the tense, if this is a verb, or it's the part of speech if it is not a verb. And so the part of speech here, this is not a verb, this is a noun. So you write on that next in the next column the word noun. Now the next column says a voice. Well, nouns don't have voices. So you leave it blank or just put a straight line through there to notice. If you put a straight line, it means that you have looked at this, you have examined the word, and you know that it is not a verb. So you put a straight line. You can either do that or leave it blank. The next column, column number 5, is mode, and only verbs have modes, so that doesn't apply. But case, nouns have cases. And so here you want to put either an N or N-O-M, which means nominative. I always just put an N or nominative. Next, column 6 is person. Verbs have persons, so we're really not concerned with that on this word. Person or gender. Remember, nouns have genders. Masculine, feminine, or neuter. Well, Adelphos is a masculine noun, so why not put an M or an MS, whichever you prefer. I just put an M in the column under numbers on column number 6. Column number 7 is number, and both verbs and nouns have number. That means singular or plural. Adelphos is singular, so put an S in that column, or if you prefer, an SG. And notice the last column is translation. What does the word Adelphos in the second column, the source, mean? It means brother. So you will write the word brother in the translation. Now, it is also the subject of the sentence, so you might want to put S-U-B-J or S-U-B-J-E-C-T or whatever you can put for subject. I would put an S-U-B-J there. All right, that concludes the location. We have now located the word Adelphos. Now we're going to the second word in that sentence. And you do this with every word. The second word is blepe. So, under that first column, you write the word blepe. The source, the second column. What does blepe come from? It comes from blepo. That is the word you find in your lexicon, blepo. In the next column, it says tense or part of speech. Now here, we put the tense. You can put a P in there because we are now dealing only with present tense. And as you go through this, well, you might want to change it to P-R-E-S. Yeah, change it to P-R-E-S. You'll readily recognize that to mean present. And that is the present tense. Notice your column heading is tense or part of speech. So that's what you put in under on this line after blepe, blepo, but present. It is the present tense. Something happening now. Fourth column says voice. Now for the word adelphos, we didn't have anything to put in this column because this has only to do with verbs. And so you're only going to put voice in this column. And the voice that we are talking about right now is only active voice. The subject is performing the activity. So you put ACT in this column 4, out on the same line with blepe, blepo, P-R-E-S, and now ACT, active voice. Now we have mode or case. Under the noun, we had a case, but now under this is a verb, and so we want a mode, and we are only at this time dealing with the indicative mode. The subject does something, it is simply a stated fact. So IND, indicative. And that's present active indicative. And you remember when we started with verbs on lesson 3, there page 20, the book said right under lesson 3, present active indicative. So we have those three words now, present active indicative. Column 6 is either person or gender. Verbs don't indicate a gender. They indicate only person. Well, blepe. We know that it's not the first person because that would be blepo. We know that it is not blepes because that would be second person. The word when we say adelphos, we are talking about the third person. And so blepe is the third person, and it is blepe, the third person singular of this verb. So I would put a 3 and an RD, third. You don't have to put the RD if you don't want to. And then the seventh column is number. Is this singular or is it plural? Well, it is singular. Just like the noun, adelphos, that's singular, so is the verb singular. And then you put in the translation, you might want to you either put to see, or you might want to put he sees, because it is, well, you might just want to put sees, S-E-E-S. He sees, the brother sees, whatever you want to put in that column. This is your work now. You're locating these words. Then the word anthropon. Put that on the third line. Anthropon. Anthropon. Be sure you get the accents right. Now, what is the word that you find in your lexicon when you are looking for the word anthropon? Well, the word you find in your lexicon is just like the word in the vocabulary at the beginning of this lesson 4. Anthropos. That's the word you put on this line. Anthropos. This is the word you find in your lexicon. If you were to look on in the back of your book, on page 255. And you would find, not on that page, yes, on that page, on page, no, it's not on that page, anthropos, it's on page 256. Page 256, the word anthropos is found in that column. That is always the word form that you find in your Bible Greek lexicons. Okay, now, column 3, tense or part of speech. Well, verbs have tenses, so for part of speech here we put noun, just like the word adelphos was a noun. Column 4 is voice. Nouns don't have voices. Just like adelphos, we put a straight line or leave it blank. I am putting straight lines here on mine, but you don't have to. Column 5 is mode. Mode or case. Verbs have modes, so we're not dealing with a verb here. We're dealing with nouns. So that is case. Do you remember what case anthropon is? Accusative. Accusative case. It's going to be the object of something. That is the use of the accusative case. It's an object. The next column is column number 6. Person. Verbs have persons. We're dealing with genders. And the gender of the word anthropos is not masculine. It is not feminine. I mean, it is not neuter. It is not neuter. It is not feminine. It is masculine. So, put an M in that column. The last column, I mean, the seventh column, is the number. Is this singular or plural? It, again, is singular. So you have three S's down that column for this particular sentence now that we're dealing with. This is the first sentence of paragraph 45, the exercises. I'm helping you to translate this sentence. All right, the last column is translation. You translate the word as it is in the second column, and that word anthropos means man. Now, you can translate the sentence by this information that you have put out here. Adelphos is the subject. It is the nominative case. It is the subject of a sentence. So you put a man, a brother, in this sentence, probably you might want to put a brother. Oh, you could put brother just by itself. A brother. I'm going to translate it a brother, but if you want to put a parenthesis around a, because there is no a in Greek, but to make it make sense, you might want to put a brother. Put a in parenthesis. Then, the word blepo, the verb, means to see. A brother sees. It is the verb that goes with this nominative case. And what does a brother see? Did you ever see without seeing something? Unless, of course, in the darkness of the night, when it was absolutely dark and you couldn't see anything, well, you didn't see then. You may have looked. I suppose we can stretch it to say you looked, but you did not see. When you see something. There has to be an object of your sight. So a brother sees. Well, the question is, what did the brother see? And if he sees something that you answer the question, what, then the Greek word has to be in the accusative case. So a brother sees a man. We want to put an A in parentheses. You can do that. You don't have to, because it is legitimate to just say a brother sees a man, as in this sentence. Do you get the idea? You have to locate before you know how the word is used in a sentence. Even now, when I open my Greek Testament and I am reading a sentence in Greek, I don't always have a pencil in my hand, and I don't always do these charts just like we have done right now, but in my mind, I always locate. I always locate. And if this sentence that we have just translated were in my Greek Bible, I would automatically, consciously, I would know I was doing it. I would locate. Adelphos is a nominative, singular, masculine noun. It is the subject of a sentence, and that is the form I find. And so I've run through it there with you vocally, what I do. You will never get away from location. If you can't locate, you cannot translate. Because if you can't locate, I can dispute your translation of a verse. If you do not know that Adelphos is the subject, I might say to you, well, it says, a man sees a brother. Do you see the importance there? I might say that. A man sees a brother, and if you cannot locate, then you cannot dispute what I'm saying. You cannot challenge what I have just said, because you don't know what the subject really is and what the object is. You might know the word blepe means to see, but do you know who is doing the seeing? I hope I'm emphasizing this enough in your mind to do this. Now, these sentences here in this exercise, I want you to do these sentences, but I want you to do this location just like on this chart in your syllabus, but make your own syllabus chart. Do this on every sentence. Now, you don't have to keep those. Once you have checked your answers with my sheet, which is in the syllabus, if you've checked your answers and you know that you have translated correctly and you have located the words correctly, then you can throw your sheets away, of course, after that. If you don't do that, you're going to have quite a volume of Greek notes over the years, over just the next few lessons, in fact. But folks, locate before you start translating. I would locate every word in each sentence, and then after you've located each word, then translate that sentence. Locate, and then translate. And be able to say authoritatively, I know this is correct. Then check your answers with my information that I have given you on location. All right? Now, look back at paragraph 44. Paragraph 44 has to do with what we call a movable new. A movable new. And what this is simply a letter new, added on to the third person plural verb. Okay? We had verbs blepo, gnosko, and when you conjugate those words, blepousi, you can put a new on the end of it if the word is followed by a vowel. Gnoskousi, if gnoskousi is followed by a vowel, and even sometimes when it's not, by the way, you can add, yes, I see Machen even includes that. But usually it is if there's a vowel. It's a euphonic device. Oh, what does the word euphonic mean? Euphonic. We've had the word, we haven't had the word phono or phonao or phonograph. I've talked about them in English. Euphony. To make it sound good. The word phono, phonos, is a sound. Like in phonograph, to write with sound. So the E-U on the front of the word means well or good. Euphony means to sound good. There's another word that goes the other way, and we'll see that in a short while. But euphony. And that's what the movable new is. You can put it on. You don't have to. Sometimes in your Greek Testament, the third person plural, like gnoskousi, will be gnoskousin. or grapho, graphousi, graphousi, will have graphousine, not always, but sometime. And here in Machen's writings, he probably has movable news. I notice in sentence number 14, lambanusi, he doesn't have the new on the end there. And probably some other places he does. I don't see them write quick or quickly. So, oh yes, I noticed that in number 18, he has ginoskousin, but in the other sentences, most of the other sentences, he does not have a nu on the end. That does not change the translation of the sentence at all. It's a euphonic device to help pronounce the sentences. At least that's what we're told anyway, huh? Okay, these exercises, paragraph 45, I want you to translate to those, but as I said, first of all, locate. And then go the other way with sentences, with paragraph 2 on page 28. Translate those. And then, in both cases, check the material in your syllabus to be sure that you have translated the way I have, and I have given you options where options are available. And if you don't have the options that I have given you, you might want to review, because I believe I have given you every option possible in these translations, these corrections here in these exercises. When you have done that work, translated, checked your answers, if you have questions you need to review, I believe I have covered everything. Remember, everything you learn in the next lesson and on from there is based on what you have already learned and what we have studied thus far. So, go back, do your assignments, and if necessary, review. Review is very important, even for us who have had Greek and have done a good bit of work. We still have to review. We still have to, well, I better speak for myself, I still have to go back to the grammar books on occasions to see what the authorities have to say. So, come back when you have finished those assignments and check them in your syllabus. We'll see you with lesson number 5. All right, lesson number 5. The first declension. We spoke about the second declension before this. Anthropos, logos, huios, apostolos, doron, those words. Second declension. Now, first declension. Some of these words may be familiar to you because of your past theological study or other studies. The word aletheia. Aletheia. Hey, aletheia. Here is the feminine article. He aletheia means the truth. He basileia, a kingdom. Basileia, the kingdom. He graphe. He graphe. We have talked about grapho, the verb, and that is, the verb, and here is the noun, graphe. He graphe means a writing, or just writing. It also is the word used for the scripture, usually in the plural, when it's talking about the scripture. He graphe. The next word, he doxa. He doxa. Here's one of the words I was referring to when I said you may be familiar with these words, the word doxology. Here's the word doxa, and the word ology, you remember, logos. So put doxa and logos together, and what do you have? You have doxology, a word of glory. So, hey, doxa, doxa. Next word, eirene, eirene, hey, eirene. that means peace. Are you familiar with a girl's name, woman's name, Irene? It comes directly from this. Except for the first letter, which in the Greek is a diphthong, epsilon iota, and then an R, a rho, heather, an eta, a nu, and another eta, you can transliterate this word into the word Irene. Irene is an English word that means peace. Eirene. Hey, Eirene. The next word, hey, ekklesia. Hey, ekklesia. Again, you may be familiar with this word, and we will see this word many times, and we'll talk about the theology of the word later. Hey, ekklesia. It isn't pronounced ekklesia. I've heard people pronounce it that way, but notice the accent is on the sigma iota. Ekklesia. The next word, entole. Hey, entole. A commandment, or the commandment with the article, hey, the commandment. Zoe, zoe. Hey, zoe. The DZ sound with the zeta there. Hey, Zoe. Zoe. Sorry, got the accent on the wrong syllable. Means life. Zoology. Hey, the Zoe plus logos means zoology, the study or the word of life. Hemera. Hey, hemera. Day. The day. Without the article, it just means a day. I know you're familiar, well, I mean, I feel sure you're familiar with the next word, cardia. Cardia, hey, cardia. The heart. You're certainly familiar with the word cardiology and cardiac arrest and other words with cardia in them. Cardiology, the cardiology department of the hospital. The word of the heart, cardia, means heart. Parabole, you know this word, don't you? All you have to do is transliterate this word, well, almost transliterate this word, and you get its meaning. So I trust that you'll never miss the translation of this word. Parabole, the parable. Hey, parabole. Phone. This word doesn't mean phony. As it might sound, phoné, hey, phoné, the voice, a voice, without the article there. Phonograph, well, what else you get from the word phoné? Telephone, phonograph. Psuche, psuche. I keep getting the accent on the wrong syllable. Psuche. Hey, psuche, a soul or a life. Can you recognize a word that this might be in English? How about psychology? Psychology, psychology. If you transliterate the P, first letter, into a P and an S, make the U to be a Y, the key to be a CH, and then the eta an E, then you have the start of the word psychology, and again, add the word logos. Psuche logos is the word psychology in English. The last word in this vocabulary, hora. Hora. Hey, hora, the hour. The difference between a first declension noun and others is that the first declension nouns end either in an alpha or an eta. Look for that, an alpha or an eta. That is the indicator. Down below, he gives the declension of the word hora. Nominative and vocative, the same. Hora, the nominative. Horas, hora, horon, horai, horon, horais, horas. Now we have an exception to the accent rule. The accent Paragraph 51. The genitive plural shows an exception to the rule of noun accent. Remember, the noun accent wants to go back to the same syllable on which it was placed on the nominative singular. But here, in the genitive plural, there is an exception. Memorize it. Get it firmly in mind. First declension nouns. The accent on the genitive plural is a circumflex on the omega. Look at the word in paragraph 53. Aletheon in the genitive plural. Look in paragraph 54. Doxone in the genitive plural. Look at paragraph 56. Graphone in the genitive plural. The other accents, well, we'll talk about those. First of all, let's look back to the word hora in paragraph 48. Now we have an omega, hora, but notice the alpha on the end. Now, is the alpha on the end long or is it short? Your rules of accent will tell you this. The general rules of accent will tell you which it is. When the ultima is long, if the penult has an accent, it has to be the acute accent. So here, the alpha has to be long. Because if it weren't, if this were a short alpha, the accent over the omega would be a circumflex. The genitive singular, that alpha sigma, it is a long alpha sigma. We know that the alpha sigma in the dative is long because the alpha has to be long to have an iota subscript under it. The accusative, again, alpha nu is a long, it's a long syllable, or else the omega would have a circumflex over it. The nominative plural, nominative and vocative plural, horai. We say that the alpha iota is a short diphthong here. Back on page 13 in Machen, under paragraph number 10, Machen says there in the paragraph that starts, syllables containing a long vowel or diphthong are long, but final alpha iota and final omicron iota, that is the alpha iota and the omicron iota coming at the very end of a word, are considered short so far as accent is concerned. It is not just the omicron iota that is final, that is a short one, a short syllable, but it is also the alpha iota that is short. So here in the word horai, horai, the alpha iota is short because it is on the end of a word, and there's no sigma following it, and so the omega has a circumflex on it. Notice the genitive plural, horon. In the genitive plural of first declension nouns, there is a circumflex accent over the omega, no matter where it is on the nominative singular. The dative horais, and then horas, and we know that the alpha iota sigma is long. The alpha sigma on the accusative plural and the alpha sigma on the genitive singular, those are just alike. Do you notice that? The genitive singular and the accusative plural are spelled just exactly alike. The alpha sigma is a long alpha, so the omega has an acute accent on it. Paragraph 50 has to do only with the word hora. There are other nouns that this does not apply to. He says that it should be observed that the alpha, the nominative, genitive, and accusative singular and accusative plural are long, but that has only to do with this noun, hora. So you might want to put that out there after that sentence in paragraph 50. It's just concerning the word hora. He's talking about that one word at this time. The genitive plural shows an exception to the rule of noun accent. The weight of paragraph 50 is this, that the accent on the genitive plural is always a circumflex, no matter where the accent was and what the accent was. On the original form, the nominative singular, it is always a circumflex on the genitive plural of first declension nouns. So please keep that in mind very firmly. All right, we are coming to the end of this tape. We will stop here and we will continue the discussion about first declension nouns in the next lecture.